She's to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
I don't know.
Hi, welcome to Casual Trek, a Star Trek recap and ranking podcast brought to you by Nerd and Ty and Orion Slavers. Yes, they are totally endorsed by Nerd and Ty. Just want to check if they're listening. I'm Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and a The 100 fan.
And I'm Miles Reed Lobato, a science fiction writer and a fan of Doug Ramsey, the new mutant who may not have had a power that's good for superhero fighting, but it didn't stop him from getting in the fight and doing what's right, even if it did end up with him coming down with a bad case of gunshot to the back. But don't worry, he got better 20 years later, and then they nerfed his power set to ridiculous levels.
I mean, we're not getting to the time where he got internet addiction.
Oh, we don't talk about the time when he got internet addiction. Like, in my mind, it is basically 80s era Doug, then he disappears, and then it is Krakoa era Doug, where I think Doug has been the best.
He has been the best boy. We, on the other hand, are possibly not the best people as far as Trekkies go, because we're, you know, fans of Star Trek, but it's far from our first thing. And as such, we're going to be watching 3 episodes of Star Trek and rank them on our big list of best to worst, judging as only a person with a positive yet passing knowledge can in this objectively perfect list. All right, so this time we are doing something a little odd. We've got a triple bill of Enterprise. In the 4th season, they made a load of three-part episodes. They were interconnected while also being of their own thing, and we had no clue whether they were a dedicated three-parter or not, so we're going to find out. And how better to do that than by watching the adventure of Brent Spiner getting a paycheck and being a Soong again. Hooray! So, Miles, before we go on, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying since we last spoke?
Well, it's been a rough couple of weeks here in America.
I like that that's evergreen as well. That's terrible. But we know the terrible thing that happened the other day. When this airs, something new will have happened.
Yeah. Hopefully we've all declared an anteater our god, and I for one salute our new anteater overlord. But we were just trying to discuss, like, watching a movie, and Rihanna kind of wanted to watch a horror movie because she's been kind of stepping into that particular genre of movie. And she wanted to watch something fun but dumb. Yeah. Aha! I said. Then I have just the film. Let's watch Friday the 13th, Part 2. And we did. And that film, as most of the Friday the 13th films are dumb as fucking bricks. But
they really are.
They are. Like, when I was having my kind of my big horror movie phase in the 60s, in the 90s, when I was about 16, which of course was brought on by the fact that Scream was a really popular movie franchise which reinvigorated the slasher genre, I was more of a Halloween fan, which is a shame because the Halloween films drop off the quality wagon pretty quickly, and the fact that we have 3 separate continuity worth of Halloween sequels is kind of a mess. So I'd only ever seen, like, the first 3 Friday the 13th films. And like I said, dumb as bricks. They're cheap exploitation, but they look good. They're mostly shot on location. And yeah, you know, they are the urtext for every single slasher cliche. Like, you got your dumb teenagers, you got your stoners, you got your couple who only exist to get killed whilst either post-fuck or during-fuck. And then, like, the one, like, the funny guy who you relate too much to, but you also hate at the same time because you can kind of see yourself. And then we watched that, we had fun, and then like a week later we're like, hey, we're trying to decide on a film to watch, and we thought, hey, let's watch Friday the 13th Part 3. This one's in 3D, which I haven't seen since the days of VHS tapes, which I bought. Oh god. It was the little cheap video stall along not Sydney Street, but where the Snooper's Paradise is. And that little area beforehand, which used to be a cafe at some point, but had a secondhand video shop in the front. And Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D is, again, if you think Part 2 is dumb as bricks, this is dumber than Bricker than Friday the 13th Part 2. Not helped by the fact that they are overusing the 3D gimmick to hilariously dumb and almost very cynical ways. So you've got a harpoon to the eye. You got a guy getting his head squished so far his eyeball pops out, and it's clearly a mannequin. And also popcorn flying at the screen because the one stoner guy is making popcorn.
Of course. Yeah, I like horror, but very much, again, along with that Scream kind of renaissance and revisiting of it all, I'd only been reading horror until then, and I didn't really go backwards much. So it was when I got flu, I don't know, 2010, 2012, thereabouts, and was off work for a bit. For some reason, I decided to marathon all of the Friday the 13th. They are very stupid, but very enjoyable in their stupidity. Recently, I started listening to a podcast called Nature Trail to Hell, which is co-hosted by former editor of X, Jordan White. And they go through horror movie franchises. So I listened to their one of The Purge, and then the Saw movies, which, as squeamish as I've been watching for their ludicrous continuity, which is like a Jenga tower of different, someone gets a call in one film and three films time, you will actually find out what that was. It's stupid, but it's got this weird tangle of continuity, and Friday the 13th is where I'm up to now in their marathons.
That's the Saw film that sounds like how... did you ever see the original trilogy of the Bourne Identity films?
No.
Okay,
the first one and gave up.
Okay, because the second one ends on a kind of a... The ending scene of the second one happens midway through the third film.
Okay.
But I don't know, given your love of comic book continuity, I feel like you should watch the Halloween films. Because they like I say, when they reboot, they basically DC level reboot.
Oh god.
So it's like Halloween's 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
Are their own continuity. Then it's Halloween 1, 2, and 7, and 8 are their own continuity.
Uh-huh.
Then Halloween 2018. Halloween Kills, Halloween Ends are their own continuity. And we're probably going to get another continuity of Halloween films sometime soon.
Yeah, give it a few years. Wow, that does feel like some Zelda Hyrule Historia kind of bullshit.
Yeah, and then you have the two remakes by Rob Zombie. And then you have Halloween 3, the film you may have noticed I didn't mention at all, which is its own film, which has nothing to do with Michael Myers, when they wanted to kind of spin this off into, we're just going to have this be a thematic series of films, like they're just going to be like anthology movies.
Yeah, the early Fast and Furiouses were trying.
Yeah. And then that went so well. They went, well, shit, for Halloween 4, okay, I know we blew up Michael Myers at the end of Part 2, but he survived that. He survived being set on fire and blown up. So did Donald Pleasant somehow, for some reason.
Okay, well. Good. Are you planning on doing the rest? Or
We are dedicated to watching as many as we can until we're like, nope, we've hit a point either too stupid or too misogynistic to continue.
Excellent. Well, enjoy. And yeah, if you want to hear a fun podcast about it, Nature Trail Tales.
Okay.
Been good fun.
And so, Charlie, what non-Star Trek and more than likely non-Friday the 13th thing have you been enjoying?
Yeah, I very nearly put Nature Trail to Hell on this, weirdly enough. But I'm just finished with 1981 in my 2000 AD marathon. I've started 1982.
Has the Apocalypse War started yet?
Literally just starting. Oh my God, it was like... Blockmania lasted through Christmas, and then the very like end of the year and start of January, Apocalypse War. So yeah, it's very exciting.
You were in for like 20 weeks. I think Apocalypse War is 20 episodes.
Wow.
Of full on Carlos Esqueza art for the whole, like he. This is when he came back to Dread.
Mm.
And so he draws the entirety of Apocalypse War.
Excellent. It just having read the first part of it this morning, it looks gorgeous. But because I've said, you know, you dread things and all that before, I decided to say Nemesis for Warlock is what I've been enjoying. It's something which... was hinted at originally. Like, there were a couple of strips that featured him in a vehicle as kind of the antagonist of a villain point of focus, Torquemada. And then there was a massive gap where they were like, oh, Nemesis is coming. Nemesis coming sometime soon. We promise. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. And then it fucking did. And my word, Pat Mills, Kevin O'Neill, amazing artwork. It's like, you know, just the weird panels, the weird monstrous things, and the kind of the fact that Nemesis is too big and ungainly to really work well makes him even more wonderful and mysterious. Like, you will see things around him. Or reacting to him. Like, he is, when he appears, it is something spectacular and epic. And Torquemada, or the kind of possessing spirit of Torquemada, is such a piece of shit. It's been a real joy to read in a kind of, you know, there are bits where it feels like the art's taking examples from medieval marginalia. Sometimes it's taking elements from Bosch. You know, it's just glorious. Sometimes you get some real, like, almost folk horror-y vibes where these people are trying to hang and kill Nemesis, and they all start suffering these weird maladies and problems. And it's like, because our hero, who is hanging from a noose, in theory dead or dying, is blighting all of them for their part. In his downfall, it's been incredible to experience.
Do you think you can quickly surmise the basic gist of Nemesis the Warlock for our mainly non 2000 AD reading audience?
It's a weird one. Like, it's somewhere between an arrowhead and a horseman. Kind of is this magical entity. Who's rebelling against this zealous religious science fiction kind of future and people. Like, Torquemada is this person who's very, like, Spanish Inquisition witch hunter kind of, like, coded character. Who, at first, I was like, oh, this is just science fiction. When it was Nemesis in his weird Nemesis-looking car. And is Torquemada some kind of evil traffic cop of the future? And kind of, but like watching Nemesis disrupting and destroying bits of this regime has been glorious to see. And again, because he's so weird you know, there's nothing quite like him as far as a lead character, because he's doing the things the villains should be doing, but he's not, you know, he's this weird kind of witch thing. Almost. It's made me want to find the indie hero clicks that I've got to get for Nemesis for Warlock that I'm pretty sure was on there to put up on the desk at some point. I'm pretty sure I've got a Dread there already. So yeah. But yeah, it's been fun. I'm curious to see what book two's gonna do. And it feels like it's done less of the kind of, here's your initial story, here's actually the origin of it, which some strips like Strontium Dog and Rogue Trooper.
Yeah.
It seems happier with us not knowing.
I think there is some kind of establishing stuff in later parts. I'll be honest, book two is a bit of a step down because it's not Kevin O'Neill. He comes back for book three. It's Jesus Redondo.
Okay.
Who is good at weird, but not Kevin O'Neill weird. And then round about book four, we get the art of Brian Talbot.
Oh.
Who will do the art for books like, I think he does books 4, 5, and 6.
Nice.
And if you ever read like Luther Arkwright, you know he can do the sort of dystopian feudalism mixed with science fiction really well.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, we are not here to talk 2000 AD. We're here to talk about Star Trek, and specifically Enterprise. Oh, yes, it's been a long road. We'll start off with Season 4, Episode 4, titled Borderland. It aired on the 29th of October 2004, written by Ken Lezebnik, and directed by David Livingston. The UK and US number one hits feel extremely 2004. They are Eric Prydz with Call On Me and Kiara with Goodies. Yeah. I vaguely remember hearing Call On Me on the radio. I don't remember Goodies at all. And as much as I like a G-Funk whistle, it didn't really have any staying power for me.
I remember the Goodies as in Bill Oddie, Tim Brooke Taylor, and Graham Gardner.
Yeah, Kiara was singing about them, surely.
Yeah, clearly. You know, anytime, any place, they'll be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember Call On Me, but I've always thought it was either he was either saying Run Away, Lean On Me, and not Call On Me. Because I'm actually notoriously bad at hearing song lyrics. So I thought he's been, for the last 20 years, I thought he's been saying, run away, lean on me, run away, lean on me. Which, you know, is a very kind of, you know, mixed message of a song.
Are we
to run away from him, or are we to lean on him? Or are we going to run away to lean on him?
Well, I guess we're running away to call, because otherwise, you know, it wouldn't be worth calling you if we were in the same place.
That's very true.
If you've run off, then yeah, now we can chat on the phone. That's probably it.
Now, Charlie, you have 5 minutes to talk about Borderland. Not Borderlands or Borderlands 2 or Borderlands the prequel. Just
or the keep on the Borderlands.
Yep. And as much I'm sure you'd like to give us your Claptrap impression, no. No, please, please, God, no. All right, and go.
Hey, it's the Klingons. Oh no, they've already been taken down by some youths with mullets who look like an early 2000s version of the characters from The 100. And yeah, those fuckers on Paramount Plus hid the skip intro button, so I had to pause it before I saw it. Anyway, we're on Earth, and at night it looks slightly less like bad 360 graphics than it did last time we saw it. Archer is visiting Arik Sung, who's like a really smug, nerdy Hannibal. Apparently the mullet gang was some of the augments he illegally created, so Archer needs him to help catch them. They need to go to the Borderland. On the Klingon ship, we see the mullet gang all in fashionable tatters, with nary a hairdresser among them. Malik led this attack, and while he's pretty pleased, his girlfriend, Persis, says their leader, Rakan, who she's also the girlfriend of, won't be pleased. So all a bit tense, all a bit high school, but with some murder. Soon enters the Enterprise, all jovial, poking at the emotional scars of the crew. But it's fine, you know, where would he escape? After all, you know? We'll see. Yeah, it's one of those, I escape with a paperclip in my mind kind of prisoners. Anyway, Trip tries to catch up with T'Pol, who got married last episode, so I guess he didn't stop it like we'd hoped, and like her mum seemed to hope. They're interrupted by Archer, who has a neat new captain's chair. Also, he meets up with T'Pol and gives her a compass for her first official day on the job. Finally, they're at the Borderland, which looks a lot like the rest of space. Soong is chatting with Phlox, who knows how dodgy he is and isn't giving him the benefit of the doubt, even though he's also a bit of a mad scientist. And then the ship shakes. It's Orion slavers. They beam T'Pol and a few others away and then flee. And Soong, he's used to dodgy things. He knows where they're going. Varix 3, to sell the abductees as slaves. Meanwhile, Malik and Persis have a confrontation. She's going out with Rakan, but she says she totally likes Malik. Malik's being really dramatic about it all. Anyway, the Orion slavers have T'Pol and the others in cages with horrible things in their necks that'll give them a shock. Ensign Jeff Pierce is really freaking out with the energy of a man who knows that his shirt is very red. Archer is going to Varix with Soong and put a transponder in him so he can easily be beamed back if he flees. T'Pol, meanwhile, is dragged off and Jeff fights back. He is extremely easily defeated. And a giant Orion lifts T'Pol up like she's some kind of doll, shakes her around, and people bid on her. She sells for a lot of money and she is not amused by this entire thing.
I just want to say T'Pol reacts to being picked up how my cats usually react to when I pick them up.
She's very much got that look of like, just, I just did kind not of, want
just,
this.
Just hang there and look, you know, slightly annoyed.
Yeah. The augments are still bitching. People believe Malik liberated them and Rakan's falling for Persis playing them off against each other. Only no, he isn't. He catches them conspiring, tries shooting them. And oh dear, Persis took the ammo out of his gun. Malik gets the others to gang up on him and stab him in the gut, saying he's gone against Father Soong. Persis sheds a tear, but is told, don't bother. Jeff is up for auction and no one gives a shit. Archer gives him a pity bid and then takes him to the ship and asks him to keep the implant in, but switched off, because then they can analyze it on the ship and find out how to fix it. And sure enough, when they head back down, with the solution in hand, they're spotted. Oh dear, T'Pol punches her new owner out. When her slave tag's activated, it does nothing. So it's time for a riot. Yay, riot! Soong shocks Archer and flees, shocks himself to disable the transponder. The big Orion grabs T'Pol, who kicks him solidly in the junk and beams away. Archer gets up high, spots Soong, and after a bit of an awkward chase, Soong's caught. On sickbay, there's a lot of wounded abductees from the crew. Trip visits T'Pol, who says that her honeymoon, such as it was basically meditating alone on a mountain. Then the ship's hit. Oh no, the Orions are after them. But they've been driven off by the augments in the stolen bird of prey. They want Soong, and they're not afraid to quote Nietzsche.
So close. All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay, Charlie.
Yep.
I'm going to have to pick you up and just hold you like a disappointed cat to show my disappointment. All right.
This wouldn't happen if I was augmented.
Oh, God. Oh, my back. Oh, my back. Oh, my back. All right, and down.
Wow. That was awkward. Wow.
How do you have such tiny little legs?
Let us never speak of this again.
No, and let's never put it on a podcast. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, your stopwatch to see how long it takes you to recap the rest of the episode starts now.
So, yeah, The augments want Soong and they're not afraid to quote Nietzsche to do it. Archer is taken as a hostage by a boarding party, and Soong says, leave him behind. So he suggests he learn Klingon, as the diplomatic incident his children has caused isn't going to go away anytime soon. On the Bird of Prey, Soong gives a speech about how he's going to build a new world with many more brothers and sisters for the augments. Oh no! To be continued.
All right, that is 32 seconds. Now, Charlie, I have two questions for you. Number one, are you a Malik Persis shipper or a Raka Persis shipper? Or are you a Malik Raka shipper? Because we're in full on, like you said, CWYA drama with those with those crazy augmented kids.
Oh my god, they are so, like, I guess at this point it wouldn't even be CW, it would be the WB.
Oh, okay, so...
You know, like,
Would they be, like, background actors on the OC?
Maybe, yeah, like some weird rough kids. Although, to be honest, they all are acted by people that would play the posh kids from the OC.
Wait, hang on, was our beloved Dawson's Creek still going?
Think it was over at this point. Gilmore Girls was going.
Okay.
Dawson's Creek was over in 2003.
Oh, shame.
Fairly rubbish final season, but for the wonderful hell of his own making that Dawson Leary ends up in.
I've told you that when I first saw when I first watched Dawson's Creek, I thought Pacey was the main character.
I mean, yeah, in a lot of people's hearts he is.
And this was before, you know, he and Joey got together in season three.
Ah, I see. Yeah, these kids, they have got a real odd kind of, like YA rebellion vibe, but are also kind of evil with it.
So that leads into my second question. Have we ever had anyone in fiction quote Nietzsche who hasn't turned out to be a complete and total smeghead?
Probably not. No, like, don't get me wrong, it would be worse if they quoted Ayn Rand, but Nietzsche is someone who it is worryingly easy for dickheads to quote. He had a kind of, this is our lead boy who is going to be our point of view character, our kind of hero in all of this. It's like, no, he's just an arsehole. And apparently the others are all good with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll work out well for everyone.
This is, as we've seen from the Mirror Universe, this is how a functioning society works.
Oh my god, that's what should have happened. Ship them over to the Mirror Universe, they'd be happy there.
Maybe that's like the big difference in the Mirror Universe, is that, you know, augments took over in world, you know, after the eugenics wars, and that's why the Mirror Universe is how it is.
Maybe. Yeah, and Miles, are you a wrestle boy at all?
No. God, no.
No. Same.
The closest I ever got to wrestling was the WWF Royal Rumble game for Super Nintendo.
Oh, that was great.
If only for the bits when you can climb out of the ring and then pick up the steel chair and then just whack people with the steel chair.
If that's what I'm thinking of, there was a move that my brother and I had no idea what it was, but it looked like you were just messing up their hair slightly.
The grappling, I think that one was.
Okay. But yeah, it just looked like really catty behavior. Like, oh, stop it. Stop it. I spent ages making my hair look like this. There is a WrestleMan in this.
I have tried to watch wrestling, and I once saw a wrestle show at live at a convention.
Oh yeah.
And that was quite fun. And I don't think I really got wrestling until COVID. And I was watching a clip of the wrestlers doing their shtick, on stage, in the ring, in a completely empty stadium, but they're still bringing the energy as if they're delivering all this, these grandiose speeches to crowds of thousands. And I think that's when I got that how much of wrestling is just awkward Amdram energy.
Definitely. It feels like a thing I should be more into than I am, because I'm not, and I've tried. And there's a role-playing game called Worldwide Wrestling, which is, you're not trying to make a character and win the game, you're trying to score heat and try and get the audience to pop and all of that kind of stuff. And that looks really good. And I've tried with wrestling. Most of what I saw of it as a kid was the brief window before The Simpsons started. and that was it. But yeah, there is a wrestler called Big Show in this, who is that giant Orion.
Okay.
I have no idea if he's a good one or bad one, but there he is. For any of our fans that like the wrestling, there is Big Show in this. They put a lot of green paint on him, and then he waves around to Paul like she's a mildly annoyed cat. And yeah, then gets kicked in the trunk.
Yeah, that's definitely not a legal wrestling move. Do you know who else turned up in this episode?
Oh.
It's our old friend J.G. Hertzler, who is playing a Klingon. He is the Klingon captain of the bird of Bird of Prey at the start of the episode.
Oh, okay.
I recognize his very distinctive, that growl of a voice.
Love that voice. Yeah, it's... I was surprised how quickly the Klingons were dispatched, especially by a bunch of plucky teens.
Youths!
Oh, the youths! Such scamps, such scallywags, getting in the way all the time. Yeah, and I don't know if Jeffrey Pierce is going to be a thing on this. Like, T'Pol meets up with him and is in a panic in a cage. And she does admit, like, I don't even know who you are, mate. So I'm Jeffrey! Oh, God! And somehow he survives it all.
Yeah. Like,
I was shocked that he made it through.
I still love how even by season 4, Enterprise is trying to stick to, like, its credo of we're not just gonna kill our crew indiscriminately, because it's a lot harder to replace people.
Yeah. I mean, compared to, you know, Kirk and Kirk's day. It's like, well, we've got a lot more people in Starfleet these days. So, you know, if a few die, that's, you know, not too bad.
So, Brent Spiner.
Yeah.
I feel you're being a bit a little bit uncharitable just by claiming he's just collecting a paycheck.
I mean, okay. He is acting in this. He's not like Harrison Ford in the Star Wars sequels where he seemed asleep mostly. But he's he's very much I've met nerds that have the level of smug smug antagonism that he has, and it just rubbed me up the wrong way. I was like, oh, Brent.
They're usually Rick and Morty fans, let's be honest.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, he was entertaining, if quite cliched.
Yeah, like, it's always fun to see Brent Spiner not, and clearly he also enjoys when he doesn't have to be Data and can kind of, you know...
Yeah, no face paint.
No face paint, no...
Being able to remote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I feel he did the psychotic madman a lot better than that, whoever that guy was who was playing Juran in the one episode of DS9 where Juran is in Ezri Dax's head and going, I am a killer!
See, I enjoyed that terrible happiness. It's different for us. We know. Because we saw moments before the episode with the other actor, playing Juran Dax. It's like, you killed three people and not in a oh I'm so sinister kind of way. I guess he was just keeping entertained.
And this episode was, you know, it's set up for what we're gonna get in the next two. Like it definitely feels like we've got a story. It's not gonna fully stretch to three episodes, so we're gonna have
put other things in as well.
I'm gonna be uncharitable and say this first episode's kind of filler.
Yeah.
If this were a Doctor Who story, this is the part of the story when either the Doctor or the Companion get captured, and then they break out of the prison, and then immediately get captured and put back in the prison.
Now, despite that, we were talking just before we started recording about whether we're treating these three episodes as separate things or as one entry to rank. And it feels like there's just enough difference to make this something that can be ranked on its own.
Yeah.
Even if the Orion plot, I don't know, maybe they had an Orion plot and it wasn't fully formed. So they were like, stick it in with this.
We want to do something. Like, we need, like, we don't have a story. We just have, like, hey, let's have some captures captured by Orions, pop them in, you know. We'll do all the stuff that Tendi is always complaining about with how Orions get stereotyped in Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a bunch of Orion guys with weird bits in their head like they're cosplaying Brainiac.
Yeah, and, you know, the Orion women who are wearing, you know, as little as possible. And their one direct note was definitely, okay, be sexy and pout.
Yeah. So... with that in mind, the ranking, not the being sexy and pouting. I know we both do that when we're not.
We're very good at it.
We are. Just because you lot can't see it doesn't mean it doesn't happen, right? Anyway, we have a big list of Star Trek episodes and movies going all the way from our number one spot, which is Star Trek II Wrath of Khan, down at 50, we've got Carbon Creek from Enterprise, a good Enterprise episode. At 100, we've got TNG's Last Outpost with some Ferengi hopping about like mad gerbils. And finally, at the bottom, at 117th place, we have Strange New Worlds' Lift Us, Where Suffering Cannot Reach, Let's Do Nothing About the Boy Killing Machine. So... where do you think this would go on the list?
Ooh, okay.
And the good thing is we've got a bunch more Enterprise episodes on here these days, but our best one is still in spot 43 with North Star.
No.
It is not that good.
It's not that good. Like, it's fun. We have, you know, you get a nice little action set piece at the start. You get the YA intrigue of the augments and their hot topic fashion choices.
Oh my god, they've poked so many fashionable holes in their outfits.
Like, I really hope that their jeans were those jeans which are already pre-ripped, which I don't understand.
No. I mean, I'm dyspraxic. Mine would get ripped anyway, so, you know, just let nature take its course.
All right, so let's have a look. Okay, we've got 107, which is Strange New World. Trip gets more racist thanks to space pollen. Oh my, wow.
Let's see, 101 has Home, which I think this is better at.
This is better than Home. Let's see. Okay, so I'm looking at a seagull, apparently.
Yeah, doing a flyby of the house. Don't know why it's shouting, but, you know, they do like doing that.
You sure it's not an owl?
How dare you?
All right, okay. Then we've got 97, we have Impulse, which is the emotion zombies, which I feel, again, this is kind of better.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Going a bit further up than that, we do have... we've got the penetration of the space amoeba in 93 with the immunity syndrome, which was good fun. I think that's probably better than this. Like, you still get some interpersonal drama. It's just less fraught.
And there's also a giant goddamn amoeba.
Hell yeah, there is.
All right, and after that, at 94, we have Picard Season 1, Episode 6, The Impossible Box, where Picard has a reunion with Hugh.
Oh, yeah, and all the weird false memory stuff, which was really fun. Oh,
and then after that, we have, I think this might be our new 97, just beating out Impulse.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good with that. Cool.
The seagulls are coming. The seagulls are coming.
They are very vocal tonight. I think the weather's maybe, they're heading in.
Are they celebrating a Spain winning the Euro Cup?
Probably. Like, their hearts are filled with rage and chaos anyway. So, you know, for all I know, they're celebrating, you know, a car crash or someone spilt chips.
They're screaming, "It's not coming home, it's not coming home," in Seagull.
Yeah, probably. On to episode 2, which is also Star Trek Enterprise Season 4. This time, episode 5, titled Cold Station 12. It aired on the 5th of November 2004, written by Michael Bryant and directed by Mike Vega. The UK number one was still Eric Prydz, and the US had Usher and Alicia Keys with My Boo. I already can't remember. I know there have been some good Usher tracks and good Alicia Keys tracks, but yeah, this one just didn't do anything. Anyway, Miles, while Channel 4 cuts some of the scenes in this for violence, they are cowards, and I assume you'll be keeping them in, if not escalating slightly when you recap.
All right, I'm ready.
Right, best thaw yourself out and get recapping, starting now.
11 years ago, Dr. Sung is telling his very young collection of augmented super kids that humanity hates and fears them because of the eugenics wars. Young Malik asks if there are any more, and Sung tells him that there's a whole bunch waiting to be born. 11 years later, or in the present time of this episode, Sung and Malik in the stolen Klingon Bird of Prey are going over the schematics for Cold Station 12, a space station where humanity is storing the other cryogenically frozen embryos, a bunch of plagues and stuff, and which soon Sung is desperate to break out. The embryos, not the pathogens. This will be a plot point later. There's a problem, though. Malik really wants to go in on the whole, let's kill as many humans as we can, and Sung is very much wants to go all in on the, hey, let's not kill any humans, not even if they put up a fight. Malik agrees, but angry CW actor pout number 27 suggests that he's really preferring the, let's be augmented and do murders. It's been a long road getting from here to there, but on the planet Trista's 4, where Sung originally raised the kids, Enterprise has found where Sung originally raised them, and they're investigating. There's some medical equipment missing, but then they get attacked by a youth with a knife!
Oh no.
The lad, called Uda, is quickly dispatched and brought aboard as Enterprise can't find any more clues here. Sung asks Malik where Rakan is. If you don't remember Charlie's recap earlier, Rakan came down with a bad case of Et tu, Brute? Where Malik was Brutus in this little equation. Malik tells Sung that he killed Rakan in self-defense, and Sung bemoans to a tearful Malik that maybe he should have been there for his kids and maybe this needless death wouldn't have happened. Yudar confides to Archer that he is not as augmented as all the other augments, and that they called him Smike, after the crippled best friend in Nicholas Nickleby. Yudar, mate, get better friends.
Yeah.
While Udar isn't telling Archer where the others are, he does learn to his surprise that he's not going to be thrown in jail when he gets back to Earth. Trip has discovered that the missing equipment are actually artificial incubators. Sung is planning to birth the 1,800 augmented embryo stored on Coal Station 12. Oh, by the way, Phlox? Jemmy Lucas, he's a mate of yours, right? He's actually in charge of Coal Station 12. I'm sure that this isn't going to turn out to bite any of us in the non-genetically enhanced Tuklus, right? Having hijacked a Denobulan medical ship, Sung, Malik, and some of the augments break onto Cold Station 12, take it over, and capture Dr. Lucas. Phlox and Archer have a little conversation. Archer is starting to see what Sung is saying about, you know, why banning genetic engineering was, might have been a bad thing, especially since it could have helped save his father's life. It could be used for good. Phlox's species have genetic engineering, but maybe their wisdom had matched their instincts, and this is probably about as much of an argument on the ethics of genetic enhancement, genetic engineering, as the episode is ever going to give us. On Cold Station 12, they can't break the encryption to get in on the embryos. Lucas bluffs and says he doesn't have access. Sung doesn't believe him, but as Enterprise arrives, Sung uses Lucas and the lives of the other researchers to threaten Archer to turn around. With no chance of a choice, Archer turns around, but maybe there's a way in. Malik, on the other hand, has found a way to force Lucas's hand. You know, there's all these really cool diseases here. Maybe we could just kill one or two of the unnamed scientists, you know, as a little treat to Malik, but mostly to make Lucas give them what they want. Sung is reluctant, but Malik is able to convince him that, hey, maybe a little murder is okay. They throw the deputy director into a special plague tube and expose him to a little number called Cymbeline Bloodburn. I don't know about the burn, but there's definitely plenty of blood. Archer, Reed, Udar, Phlox, and some cannon fodder, sorry, I mean Makos, covertly beam onto the station. Wow! This is just like Metal Gear Solid. They locate the life support systems and get to work. Sung is pleading with Lucas to tell him what they want because he's uncomfortable with Malik beating up an old guy. You see, when Malik told Sung that he was going to soften Lucas up, Sung thought that he meant that he was just going to moisturize him, maybe administer some lotion to some dry skin, not just repeatedly hit the guy in the face. But when Lucas tells him to go to hell, Sung just decides...
Oh. Ah, time is up. Into the plague pod with you.
Okay, fine.
Right. Are you comfortable in the plague pod?
Not particularly, but I'll cope.
Okay, and I will start the timer.
When Lucas tells him to go to hell, Sung just decides, screw it, let's just kill everyone. Archer and the strike team are quickly captured. Oh, wait! Malik realizes that Phlox and Lucas are friends. And Phlox is a main character. His name is in the credits and everything, which means that when they threaten Phlox, and not some unnamed character, despite the fact that Lucas worked with the unnamed deputy director on the same space station and everything, if we threaten Phlox, then Lucas has to give them what they want. That's basic storytelling. And guess what? It works! Wow. Now Malik and Sung have the embryos. Enterprise tries to activate the station's self-destruct procedure, but the stolen Klingon bird of prey gets in the way, and they have to focus on fighting off the augments on the ship. Sung loads the embryos onto the Dedobulan shuttle and asks Udar to come with them. Udar chooses to stay with Archer. Sung is upset, but wishes him well and leaves. Malik, meanwhile, has decided to help himself to a collection of those really deadly pathogens. Well, everybody needs a hobby. Archer and Malik get into a fight. Archer even does a very impressive high kick and everything, but Malik soon gets bored and needs to escape. So he tells Archer that he set the space station to release all the pathogens into the air filtration system and kill everyone there, except for Udar. He doesn't want Udar to die such a painful death. So he just shoots Udar instead. Malik might be a bit of a shit.
Yeah.
Sung, Malik, and the frozen embryos escape Cold Station 12, and Archer, Lucas, and co. need to find a way to stop the pathogen breach. But they better think of something quickly because they've only got 40 seconds. But it's fine. They've also just cut to closing credits. I bet you this shit never happens to Cold Station 11.
Wow. Well, that is 2 minutes and 2 seconds over. And I like that this was a kind of proper classic Star Trek medical station kind of thing, you know? Let's get a space station, just fill it with all these diseases and some clone embryos. Why the fuck not?
What could possibly go wrong?
Who decides to work there? Who fills in the job application going, yeah, fuck it. Let's go on a space station in the middle of nowhere with, just a load of diseases and somehow a button that will release all of them. Who builds that?
So you've clearly never seen or read The Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton.
I have not. Is that exactly it? This is just The Andromeda Strain.
It's kind of like there's a big in The Andromeda Strain. There's a big underground medical research center which has all these different levels, which is built with the idea of studying space pathogens. And it's entirely hermetically sealed off from the outside world. There's even a nuclear bomb where if there's an outbreak in the station, the bomb will go off and blow up the entire research station, which, of course, that's what happens. And the characters have to, one character has the one key which can disable the bomb. But don't worry, there are consoles to deactivate the bomb on all the levels, except the level they're on because of funding.
Right.
So yeah, I'm guessing like there's really good perks. Perhaps it's like it has a really good perhaps they get like a really good discount at Space HMV.
Maybe. Maybe it's something where there's a planet nearby and that's where they'd stay and the commute's pretty short or something. Who knows? But yeah, like it was an interesting one for seeing what feels like an original series style space station with some kooks and that on it. I'm sure I recognize the actor that was the guy in charge there.
Dr. Lucas.
Yeah, Richard Reel, who I was trying to find any recognizable credits and has been in so many things. He was in Columbo's and Murder, She Wrote. He's got that kind of look of a day player in one of those kind of shows.
Yeah, he definitely has American character. Oh, hang on. I know who this guy is. He's the stapler guy in Office Space.
Yes. I think. Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's there. He literally took his stapler.
Maybe.
Maybe it's like in Office Space, they realized that they weren't actually paying him. So they just sent him to like a pathogen-filled space station, just hoped eventually the problem would sort itself out.
Yeah, nature will take its course. You know, this is vaguely near Klingon space. Something's going to happen with this.
This is what we definitely want on the edge of Klingon space, which is a space station filled with every fucking disease known to man.
Yeah. I mean, that said, maybe that's why. Just like, yeah, keep all the dangerous shit. Not like missiles, not like weapons, but the stuff that if you futz with at all, it's going to go haywire. And we know the Klingons are people with zero chill. If they break in, problem will fix itself. Unfortunately, Malik and his lot don't do that. And yeah, this is where Malik once again just escalates, being a real dick.
Okay, I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the storytelling trope, which is, oh, I am going to hold your best mate to hostage to tell me what I want, even though what I'm going to do is going to kill millions of people. Because I know that since you're a main character, you'll actually give a shit about this guy.
Yeah, it's a tricky one with that, because like sometimes you do see that subverted with people going, okay, no, like, let them shoot me because fucking millions of people will die otherwise. But yeah, it's, I guess it is that thing where it is playing on the fact that this is one person who has a name versus millions of Klingons that you've never met.
Yeah. Because it's like, okay, so you know Phlox an amount, I guess. But like, you're okay with letting your co-worker basically bleed out.
Yeah, that was a rough scene. I can see why, like, that must have been what Channel 4 cut, because it's not pleasant.
No. I forget that Enterprise was on Channel 4 and not BBC.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird that. But, yeah, it was interesting seeing it get that far. You know, I guess in the modern Star Treks, you know, you hear some of them swear, you see some things go a bit brutal, but you don't expect it of the Berman Braga era.
You don't really expect blood. Like, when Lucas was getting the tar punched out of him, like, his face was kind of bloodied up for a while.
Hmm. Yeah, which, again, you're beating up a guy that looks like an affable old man. This is...
Yeah.
Harsh.
You're beating up a guy who played Santa Claus in a film called... Hang on. It was called... The Hebrew Hammer.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I was just scrolling through his Wikipedia.
Yeah, he's a guy that, if he had a full beard instead of a moustache, perfect Santa vibes.
Yeah.
And these youths beat the shit out of him. And, you know, wreck all sorts of stuff.
Oh. Okay. He was born in Menominee. Yes, I've lived in this state for so many years and I still can't say half these names. Menominee Falls, Wisconsin.
Menominee.
Do
do do do do
do do. Menominee. Do 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 do. So yeah, he's a local boy.
Wow. Okay.
Well, a local Santa, and these youths beat him up.
Oh, terrible. Terrible behavior from them all.
Sung, you might be a bad parent.
Yeah, yeah. Like, watching the 11 years earlier, I admit, I laughed the moment it started 11 years earlier. It's like, oh, we're going here, are we? But also that immediate thought of, well, if I want a cult of personality, how best to do it? But by, you know, creating a bunch of children, and while they're young and impressionable, telling them all sorts of stories that fit my agenda and my take on it all. You know, so yeah, some good cult training from a younger son, who also reminded me, oh yeah, he looks a bit older in the present day, but, you know, he's not old.
No.
Brent Spiner at this point. Yeah. Oh, and there were some fun X-Files lights.
Oh,
I assume they were stolen from them.
More than likely.
Well, yeah, given the general attempts at cheapness. But
well, you know, given that these production companies all pretty go to the same LA based prop house.
True. Yeah. So yeah, this one felt a bit less of its own thing than Borderland. It was this one where I went from confidently these episodes stand alone to I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. As much as the space station stuff was fun. Yeah, it doesn't quite stand alone, but it is the middle part. So it is what it is with that. And still has some fun moments. So, with that in mind, where should this one go on the old board?
The old big list. Okay.
I guess the immediate thing is this better or worse than Borderland?
I don't know. What do you think?
So I like the set of Cold Station 12 more.
Yeah. Okay.
But Borderland had more of a thing going on with the Orion Slavers and having to figure out, we can't just blast it.
Yeah.
We shouldn't, like, it's too late to just buy our way into getting our people back. And that's not going to be great. That's just going to encourage them. You know, so it had a more interesting problem than Malik's going to release all of these pathogens, because we're not even seeing the conclusion of that at this point.
All right. So we've got, okay. So below Borderland, we've got Impulse, which is the emotion zombies.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that this is better still.
Yeah. Okay.
Like you have the nice little scene between Phlox and Archer when they discuss genetic engineering. It is kind of nice to see Phlox have a character beat where it's like, oh, here's your friend. He might be in danger. You know, don't worry about it or anything. Is this when they start just teleporting people willy nilly around? Because I remember like the first episodes of Voyage of Enterprise, them not using the transporter is a big deal, and now they are transporter spamming that bad boy.
I remember seeing that in Minefield, which is
season two.
But they're still very much in the kind of I'd rather not.
Yeah,
kind of use that. So yeah, I guess they're a lot more confident. The effects feel a lot more advanced than the previous ones. So I wonder if they get some upgrade or something.
Maybe.
Don't know. But yeah, so what, between Borderland and Impulse?
Yup, that might just be like the easiest one we've done.
Wow.
I don't know. I think like the when we did the Tuvix episode, like I think all three of those episodes originally came in very close together.
Yes. Oh god, yeah, with Jatrell and all
and,
of that.
And sweaty Brad Dourif.
Oh. Well, the list was a lot smaller then.
Yeah.
And it was a lot easier to go, actually, these fit close together.
And unlike Brad Dourif in Lord of the Rings, no one shaved their eyebrows off for the part in this episode, which I have to say, that shows a lack of dedication to the acting craft.
Yeah, Act Two plays Malik, Alec Newman. Right. So, yeah, that brings us to our finale, the third part of this Augment saga, titled The Augments. This is Enterprise Season 4, Episode 6, aired on the 12th of November, 2004, written by Michael Sussman and directed by LeVar Burton.
Ah,
yeah, he's up in this, and right for the dramatic conclusion.
I would say that that's one kind of a mark in not treating these as a free passer, because they're all written and directed by different writers. Even though I'm sure, yeah, like they broke stuff down in the writers' room for the story.
Yeah, they've all got quite a different feel to them.
I definitely think there is like a feel to try and make each episode distinctive, that you can come in and not particularly worry that you missed the last two parts. You know, because you've got the Orion stuff in the first episode. You have the Cold Station, Hostage, Die Hard on a space station. And then you've got part three, which we know we got more of a epic space chase.
Definitely. So the US number one hit was Usher and Alicia Keys again, and the UK had Ja Rule with Wonderful, which, again, these all feel incredibly 2004. Like, not necessarily in a complimentary fashion, just very much that.
I just gotta say, you know, at least it's not Coldplay.
Yes. Yeah, there's that. Guess.
Like, you know, we had to be lucky that, you know, at some point, you know, while doing some late era Voyager or some early Enterprise, we are probably going to have to deal with Coldplay.
Yeah, and probably a lot of them.
Well, it could be worse. Could be Snow Patrol.
So, I'm bringing this home with the the recap of the Augments.
Okay.
And there's a... You said something about a containment breach? Oh, dear.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if you're paying attention, but, like...
I go into a dormant state whenever I'm not recapping.
All right, okay. So, in your fugue state, Dr. Lucas had one job and utterly biffed it. And now all the plagues of Cold Station 12 are going to be released. Meanwhile, on Cold Station 11, I think it might be Taco Tuesday. Or they're having a pizza party.
Oh, lovely. Well, that's good for them.
Meanwhile, everyone in Coal Station 12 is coming down with a bad case of death.
Yeah, and now the conclusion.
Go.
So, containment breach. Oh, no. Archer's playing about in a tube and isolates the room with everyone else in, so they're safe. He's got less than a minute to make it out. Can they transport him? Not really, not in a tube. So he gets them to shoot the bit of the station he's on out, and he gets launched into space just long enough to get beamed onto the Enterprise. Hooray! And all right in those opening seconds of the show. The augments have entered Klingon space. Malik is sitting in Dad's chair, and oh, he's not happy about that. Malik admits to killing Archer just to piss Soong off even more. The Enterprise fakes a Klingon warp signature to better fool both the augments and any Klingons who they're currently in the turf of. Malik gets very upset that the next batch of kids that Soong's making will have improvements. He sees it as a judgment that he's not perfect after all. And the augments pick up a Klingon ship. But wait, it's Archer! So much for him being dead. Soong's probably a bit pleased because he was frowning on that as a whole concept. Anyway, there's a bit of a shootout and the Bird of Prey dangles the Denobulan ship Fed kidnapped out the back, knowing that it'll take the Enterprise a little while to save her while they rocket away. Malik suggests during this that the augments use a torpedo full of pathogens from Cold Station 12 to kill a bunch of Klingons and provoke a war between them and the Federation. Soong doesn't like this. He just wants to go to a bit of space called the Briar Patch, hide on a planet, and do some mad science. Trip and T'Pol try to have another chat about the wedding and are interrupted once again, this time by the warp trail being picked up so they can give chase. Malik is taking over the ship, or at least he plans on taking over the Bird of Prey, and Persis isn't keen. Everyone confronts Soong, who is very unhappy at his kids right now. The Enterprise calls some legit Klingons and pretends to be Klingon as well. They've got a bit of a translator working, and Archer has the hang of yelling at them. He says they're transporting a Chancellor from the Orions and they need to go past. The person on the call with them wants the hot goss, and Archer tells him off, which is just right for what a Klingon should do.
Oh, God. Klingon spilling tea.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
Gossipy Klingons. Just like Klingons in a cafe, just doing the Kermit meme.
Yeah. So, Persis visits Soong, and he doesn't want Malik's actions to justify the hatred of augments. That's why he's been against them killing anyone during all of this. She helps him to escape, and it's too late to stop Malik and his whole missile plan, but Soong gets out of there. He's shot out of the ship on an escape pod, is picked up by the Enterprise, who put him safely back in a cell, where he's like, oh yeah, I want to stop the augments now that they want to kill. I've made some bad children. Speaking of which, Malik suspects someone of helping Soong. He plays about with who it's going to be and whether he should torture them, and Persis deflects this, but it's way too late and he kills her. The Enterprise senses a ship and Soong's busy winding up Trip and T'Pol, stopping again any more wedding talk from them. It's a hell from the real Klingons and they've seen through the ruse. Soong tries to talk them round and it doesn't take. A fight ensues, leading to the Enterprise pulling a wing off using their grappling hooks, which is pretty cool. The augments are planning on how to deploy the torpedo, sense the Enterprise and flee. They're a bit too fast for the Enterprise to catch up with, and the Enterprise just manages to shoot the torpedo they launch before it hits the planet. Soong suggests where to shoot on the Bird of Prey to disable it. The neck, apparently. The neck of the Bird of Prey is where the power grid is. And boom, they're disabled. Malik's hurt and everyone's scattered all over the place. So he sets the ship to blow up. Soong calls, but it's too late. They're all dead and Soong's work's ruined. Soong gets escorted not for cell, but to crew quarters for his good work. And surprise, bitch, it's Malik! He's wounded and is beamed over for some vengeance, slasher horror returning from the dead style. There's a fight, and then Archer shoots a fucking hole through Malik. Right through him. The Klingons are satisfied by this. Soong's back in his cell on Earth and is made aware his work will be kept.
Oh, so close.
Oh, well. Okay.
All right. And stopwatch, go.
So Soong's back in his cell on Earth, and he gets reassured that his work that he keeps putting on the walls and keeps getting taken away and destroyed is going to be kept for future use. Wink. He starts pondering giving up the whole genetic engineering thing. Doesn't seem worth it. Maybe he'll play with cybernetics. Wink. Maybe some robots. Maybe one with slightly weird, kind of slightly golden skin and the same face that Arik Soong and somehow all of his family have. And one of them might be called Data, and one's going to be called Law, and he'll be mates with a crystalline entity. Do you get it? Do you get it yet? Do you?
To quote Ewan McGregor in Attack of the Clones, "Oh, Anakin, you'll be the death of me."
Aww.
46 seconds. I am surprised that you missed out that Malik kills Persis.
Persis. I thought Persis. I did say that. Yeah.
Oh, I must have gone into like, a few things.
I didn't cover it as long as the fight scene is, because that's surprising for kind of where he's all like, oh, yes, well, it's only one of these four people. Maybe I should get this person and torch them. And she's like, no, mate, maybe hold off. And it's like, Foolsies, I knew it was you. Time to get knifing. And yeah, like she gives it a good fight, but
you okay, Persis effect was too late. He kills her, I must have missed.
Yeah, and then he carries on like it's no problem. Just like yeah. You know, shows up at the bridge. No one's like, just wondering, where's Persis? She's been around like second in command for a lot of this. And she's suspiciously not here. And you got some red on your hand, some jam or something. Are you all right, Malik?
I think we might have figured out why the augmented humans failed and lost the eugenics wars. I think they're all actually really fucking stupid.
Yes. Yeah, they definitely feel that way here.
Like, I feel... Okay, did you feel Wrath of Khan vibes in this episode, especially like the last 30 minutes of Wrath of Khan?
Oh my god, yes.
With the big space battle.
It really wanted to be Wrath of Khan at times. Yeah.
Like, no, you can't. This isn't a Star Trek film. You have to pretend. You can only try and be Wrath of Khan in the movies. We discussed
Picard
this.
Picard Season 3 tries to be Wrath of Khan at one point as well.
Yeah,
so that's all right. They can pretend. They just won't be that way. Like, WB's Khan here really just, like, he doesn't have that gravitas that Khan had. He seems pretty dumb and pretty lost. Not in a way where he realizes, oh no, I'm a fucking idiot.
Like, these augmented kids are all as dumb, have like, yep, they're intelligent, they're quick, they're all as dumb as a bag of rocks. They have no social skills, and they just think that murder is the perfect way to, you know, to administer your society.
Well, their first 10 years were being kind of child cult by Soong, and then their next 10 years, because they're all about 20, are living alone on an abandoned facility on a planet, trying to figure out how to get off. So, yeah, it's understandable that they're all going to be a little bit, you know, a little bit thick.
Peeved.
Yeah, that too. This felt like it really ramped up the drama.
Yeah.
It did feel like it was necessary to have the first two episodes leading into it. But, yeah, like, Burson's definitely got an eye for some proper Trek action. You know, it was good fun. seeing all of that. Also, yeah, little nods here and there. So there was the mention of the Space Seed and Botany. Botany Bay for Space Seed. Yeah. Where they're like, no, that's just a myth, mate. It's like, well, or is it? You know, give it a few years and the Enterprise will find it out there. With people with similar kind of clothes, mostly in like weird tatters and things.
No, because aren't they wearing like the weird
Oh shit, yeah.
They're wearing the weird like they're wearing the fishnet like onesies and stuff.
Oh god. Yeah. I mean, that said, there's no reason that this lot and that lot should share fashion anyway, unless Ericsson's got really specific tastes and tries to instill that in all of his genetically engineered offspring.
Oh, God, he's Chris Claremont.
Oh, no. Oh, no wonder there were so many holes in all those clothes.
So, yeah, I enjoyed this. It didn't help. It helped that the, you know, the bit where they're firing the torpedo with the plague and gets fired at the planet.
Yep.
And they have to fire the torpedoes. It reminded me of one of my favorite missions in the PC game, Wing Commander 3, the Heart of the Tiger.
Oh, yeah.
You're a fighter pilot, played by Mark Hamill. And the mission is that the Kilrathi, who are the big cat evil aliens of the Wing Commander universe, have developed a plague missile, which they're shooting onto a planet. And what you have to try and do is to catch up to the missiles in your fighter and blow them up before they hit the planet.
Okay.
Which is nice. Very difficult, but a lot of fun when you achieve it.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds it. I did wonder if it would be a kind of Pyrrhic victory and that this would be where the Klingons get their original series look. So I gather that gets explained at some point in Enterprise, even though it doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll get to that eventually.
We will. Yeah. Yeah, my word. Apparently, on Channel 4, the edits, again, to deal with violence, just removes the fight between Malik and Persis, so she just vanishes in that, which is some impressive level of editing.
I love like weird edits for TV. I just got to the point, like, originally, like, when it was shown on Channel 4, Babylon 5 Seasons 1, 2, and 3 were shown, like, in the tea time slot, either, like, on Monday or Sundays. When it got to Season 4, it's being shown at 10 o'clock at night on Channel 4.
Ah. Yes. I remember ITV had the rights to Predator, and it's a film that's, what, 1 hour 47 minutes. And every time that my brother and whenever it was on, my brother and I would watch it. You know, he was a massive Predator fan. And every time it felt like they were editing slightly more and slightly more. So it felt like it was just a bit over an hour in the end. The last time that we saw it. And it's impressive seeing that kind of editing.
I think my favorite weird edit in a TV broadcast in a film, I think this was, it was Back to the Future, and I think it was shortly after the bombing attacks in London in early Y2K.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the bit where Marty is writing a letter to Doc, telling him in the future he's going to be shot by terrorists.
Yeah.
And while he's writing the letter, you hear Michael J. Fox saying, "Doc, the night I go back to 1955, you will be shot by terrorists." They cut out the "by terrorists," so it becomes, "Doc, on the night I go back to the future, you will be shot." So it becomes more of Marty a just threat, vaguely threatening him.
Yeah, that's a weird, that's a weird one there from that edit. It's like, yeah, you'll be shot, and either it's not going to say by who, not going to say how to stop it, or it is, "I will do the shooting. I've had enough of your bullshit."
I had my mum try to make out with me. I am not happy.
Yeah, it's been a real time. Yeah, there was a card game called Chrononauts that had a Back to the Future thing. version, where the fun thing was you had to not only fix your timeline to be your one specifically rather than anyone else's, but you needed to go back and uninvent time travel as well to kind of put a nice little bow on it.
Ah, yes.
Always good fun. Yeah.
So, yeah. Do you know what I didn't expect in this episode?
A reference to Star Trek Insurrection?
No, I've not seen Archer, it. Yeah. Archer to shoot a fucking hole in a guy.
Fucking hell. That was impressive. That was, I mean, it was horrible, but yeah. Like I and guess this there's is your way of making sure he's put down.
And like, this is three episodes after the episode we watched where Archer gets really kind of weepy and sad about like the horrendous things that he had to do to fight the Zindi. And in this episode, it's like, yep. 19-year-old putting a fucking hole in him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a bit of conversation in an earlier episode about how much effort it takes, how much more it takes to stun these kids than it would a normal human being. So I get that you're going to want to turn the settings up, but not to hole punch, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked the horror movie reveal of Malik appearing. At first I was kind of conflicted in a what?
It did feel a little silly, like, you know, it's even one thing that Wrath of Khan didn't do, like at the funeral, Spock's funeral, Khan just leaps out of a locker and is like, aha, cook! At last I shall have my revenge. And Scotty just shoots and Scotty just impales him on the bagpipes. Which would actually make Wrath of Khan the greatest film ever made.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's already number one on our list. It can't really do more to get higher than that. Yeah, I don't know. Part of me felt this is hokey and this feels improbable, but they don't build the ship to stop people beaming in and out at this
No.
point.
No. It's like when it happens, I'm like, oh, so he's going to kill Sung. This is kind of dumb. And then when Archer literally puts a hole in him, you're like, okay, all right, fine. We get to see Scott Bakula's like badass face. So okay, fine. You win.
Yeah. We'll let that one slide. Yeah, I did wonder if he would kill Arik Sung, but Sung would be like, oh, I have a small boy that has exactly my face. Tell him, don't do genetic engineering. It's all for futures in robots. And then die. Which I feel they went on a slightly better thing by having him
back in still, his cell. It's still kind of equally hokey. I feel like my favorite little bit, my favorite little moment in the episode, is when Sung thinks that Archer's going to escort him to his cells. Actually, no, we've got a very nice quarters for you set up for the trip back. I'm like, okay. He's not as antagonistic to, you know, Sung's earned some degree of freedom before they slam him back in a cell on Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that said, is not someone that necessarily deserves that, but no. I guess even at this point,
he's broken.
Yeah, he's not going to try and Hannibal Lecter his way out.
And I feel that Brent Spiner does a good job of showing Sung's conflict over the three episodes, where in the first episode he is pretty smug and snide and in control. Second, he's feeling a bit guilty over what his children have become in his absence. And he's starting to see that Malik might be a bad un, and he's starting to be conflicted on that. And then with the third part where he is, I have made all the mistakes and I need to make right. I feel that's for mad scientists in Star Trek, they don't generally get this much of a time frame to have that arc. It's usually in the last 30 seconds when, like, oh, I was wrong to tamper in science.
Mm-hmm.
That one guy who turned himself into an android and then made androids of Kirk and and God, some yeah. Like he only realizes the error of his mistakes like 30 seconds before he disintegrates.
Yeah, that was unfortunate timing.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was definitely a good fun one for action and Star Trek. Like I find action difficult in Star Trek sometimes. Like it either tries too hard to be something that it isn't, or you know.
When you say action, do you mean like space battles or do you mean like actual in-person punchy punchy fighty fight? Yeah.
Bit of both, to be honest. Like a bit of a fight can be good fun, but you know, Star Trek feels like that's not a priority. So yeah, when they try too hard to be an action movie, that can feel rough. But this was the right level of action, you know? A bit like pulling the wing off of a Klingon ship.
That was cool.
I'm not a massive space battle guy, but yeah, that rocked.
Now I see why they go on about how cool the grapplers are in that one in the crossover episode of Strange New Worlds. Like, yeah, grapplers are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no wonder people go by Grappler as a name in the future as well.
Yeah, it's like the anime Outlaw Star, where for some reason spaceships have like grapple hands, so they can have like, you know, arm like wrestling in space. Like, you know what? This is dumb, but this is also awesome.
Yeah, yeah, good, good.
Space, this is be dumb. More awesome.
We approve.
Yes. It's like forget tractor beams. It's grapplers where it's at.
Damn straight. Yeah, the future is grapplers.
The future is grappling hook.
On that note, on the list, I feel this is better than both the previous parts.
Yeah.
Like the direction's good, the action's good. Well, yeah, you do need some of the prior context. It's a fun time.
I do have one last thing to say.
Oh yeah,
man, how much would it have screwed up? Would it have screwed over the universe? Have been screwed over if one of Sung's children, like, was when being told that you're gonna have to go into cybernetics and work on building androids, if they just looked at their dad, who looks exactly like them, and just said, "I want to be a dancer."
Oh,
at that point they probably get shot and have another child.
Well, yeah, like they've got to have their own ambitions, surely. Not just we all want our 1800 brothers and sisters and such, you know.
Yeah, it's like the royal family have to have the heir and the spare, like the one who you're definitely going to give the science books. And the one you just make sure doesn't drink paint, just in case.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, the augments were mostly the drink paint ones.
maybe he just gives birth to himself. Like, it's just ever-increasing clones of himself.
Okay.
You know, he just kind of, you know, just injects himself an exact clone of himself, gives birth to himself. And then just leaves instructions going, okay, this is what you do. So, yeah. But yeah, this one is definitely better than the other two.
Where on the list should this go? It definitely feels above the Cold Station 12 and Borderland.
Do you know what this is not going to be better than?
Oh?
Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan, which is currently number one on the big list, because I'm sorry, the augments.
Well, young adult Khan isn't good enough.
I'm sorry, we have Khan at home. You might be slightly better than Star Trek Into Darkness, but that's a long way off. And I have thoughts on Star Trek Into Darkness.
I both can and can't wait for that.
You mean you can't? Wait.
Hey. Oh God. Okay. Let's see.
We have at number 82 Kobayashi, which is Prodigy, which is Dal speedrunning a Kobayashi Maru badly, and I feel Kobayashi is better than this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you might be right there. It's
like
it's got a fun plot even without the many cameos. And the cameos do tickle that nostalgia part.
Yeah. And I feel the cameos elevate the story to a degree.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Is this better than Dax, where we first see the evil host of Dax? And I think...
I don't think that's the right name. I think you got the episode name wrong for Dax's evil host.
Hang on a sec.
Now, this is the important stuff we have caught on recording on this show.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Equilibrium was the evil one. Oh, yeah, no, that's the court case, Dax's crimes.
I think this one is, I think actually this is honestly slightly better.
Yeah, yeah.
As Dax was kind of, Dax was good.
Mm.
But it does feel that awkward early kind of, you know, the first 10 episodes of a Star Trek show when they're still working out how all the pieces fix. So it just feels like, oh, we're going to sit down and do a TV play about crimes.
Yeah.
Instead of it being like an actual character study. And I feel like this was a good character study for Sung as a through line. I wish we had gotten more of a conclusion to Archer's feelings about genetic augmentation, because you have him in the first part being very much like, this is wrong, even though I see how it could have benefited me, to the second part where he's like, it might, how we do this, how we enforce this is, might be wrong, to the third part where it's just like, we have to maintain this for continuity to work. I've stopped caring.
Yeah, fuck it. I've ventilated your boy.
I blew a hole for a guy, and thus my issues with augments is now fixed. We're a very kind of Michael Bay symbolism.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. As much as I like the disinterested judge with Dax, it did feel like a problem that could mainly be solved with some communication.
You feel like Trills would have worked this out before.
You'd hope. So that puts this at the new 83, which, you know, on a list this big and a list that's more positive than it is negative, it's that's a fairly good showing.
Let's see, yeah, okay, I'm just looking at. Okay,
and a big jump for part three of that story.
Yeah, let's see. Enterprise, our top one is 43 at North Star. Then number 50 is Carbon Creek. Number 62 is the Andorian incident. And this is now our fifth highest rated episode of Enterprise.
Yeah. Wow.
Which, you know, hey, we are finding wheat amongst the chaff.
Yeah, I mean, that is, we've done 10 episodes of Enterprise, so that does put it firmly at the halfway point of quality with the Enterprise episodes we've seen so far. So yeah, that's kind of good. With all of that, it's time to close things off. Next time, it is our 50th main episode of Casual Trek, and as such, I thought we'd have some fun and look at the times the shows repiloted, what they were about and what they were doing. Sometimes it's a cast upheaval, sometimes it's time itself, but yeah, join us and we'll see what the repiloting's like. Although we won't be repiloting, there's too much effort to, you know, change the logo and all that.
Yeah, you know, change the theme tune.
Oh my god, yeah. I love my brother, but I'm not going to give him that much work in a couple of weeks.
I can't grow a beard, it's a problem.
Yeah, I don't want to shave a beard.
I don't want to. I don't want to shave my head. Like, you know, my hair looks this good at turning 41 tomorrow, so I'm gonna keep it.
Yeah, yeah, do it. Look, you know, this has been going for years. So
look, it's quite funny. I was at work and I saw one of those bloody tabloid magazines which had a Prince Will on the cover, and I'm just like, my God, he's so fucking bold.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a year older than me.
Yeah. Yeah, that did seem to happen quickly. Or it may be because I don't really pay attention to any of them.
I try not to pay attention, but it's like, I live in America.
You're a child. Oh, now you're an old bald man. Okay. Yeah. Well, where you can see us not talk about royals, but probably talk about some nerdy things, is the internet. You can catch Casual Trek on Blue Sky on casualtrek.bsky.social. You can always pledge a little bit of money at our Ko-fi, which is ko-fi.com/casualtrek. And Miles, where can people find you?
They can find me on my blog at miles.mareedlabato.wordpress.com. And on my Blue Sky, which is milesreedlabato.bsky.social.
Cool. I, on the other hand, can be found at skyshark.bsky.social, where I mostly talk about X-Men and role-playing games. And you can find me writing about games on Who Dares Roles, where I've been a bit more active than I have in the past year in posting things. And if you are the extremely rare Venn diagram of if you listen to this and are a patron of the role-playing group The Gauntlet, you'll be able to see some of my writing for the trophy role-playing game as one of the recent downloads there. So, yes, hooray, that one person that might listen that would be both. Cool. So, with all that, go, do a Starfleet, do not do a eugenics. And
live long, eat a jelly baby, and don't get sold into slavery. Or just don't endorse slavery.
Yeah, slavery. No. It's our stance. Admittedly, not Nerd and Ties. We did say that they were associated with Orion Slavers, but Charlie Etheridge Nunn, Miles Reed-Lobato, both anti-slavery.
We're British. We established the slave trade just so we can take credit for abolishing it.
Damn straight. You have been listening to Casual Trek, a Nerd and Tie podcast, presented by Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed-Lobato. Music by Alfred Etheridge Nunn. Star Trek by Paramount. Not us. Not yet.